Hey there, everybody, and welcome to the Android Central Podcast. It is episode number 272 for Friday, January 29th, 2016. How goes it? I'm Phil Dickinson. Welcome back to the show. Once again, live this week, semi-live, depending on how you're listening to it. If you missed last week's podcast, you missed a little bit of the news in that we are changing up the way we are recording a little bit, and that has also led us to change the time in which we are recording, so we're actually recording this on Thursday instead of our usual Friday. I think Thursdays are probably going to settle in. I don't know. Andrew, Russell, what do you guys think?
I think Thursday's fine.
A decent way to round out a Thursday.
That also explains why Jerry is not here. Thursday is usually his day off, so we're absolutely working around Jerry, and we'll get him back in the mix as soon as we possibly can. So Jerry hasn't been fired. We haven't hidden him away anywhere. We just kind of screwed him a little bit.
We haven't fired Alex either. He just couldn't be on this one either.
Yeah, so. It was very kind of a very last minute decision on our part. But Jerry will absolutely be back. We want him back. We need him back. So. That is coming. That's something else we're dealing with. But anyway, so that's why we're changing our times around a little bit. And that, and I've been, my kid broke her arm last weekend, so I've been dealing with that this week. And I don't have any real mobile stories to go with that. I tried to tie it in somehow, but I guess, I mean, she's been using her phone left-handed now.
So she didn't get like a smart brace that lets you know her heartbeat and stress level and everything like that.
They're not even gonna like put a cast on her. So just it's broken like right here, right below the shoulder.
Yeah,
so
you can't really. That was an impressive point in your arm to break.
Yeah, it's pretty gnarly. So yeah, she's just been vegging out and all drugged up for the past few days. Doing better though, so we're getting there.
I mean, I would be too.
Yes, absolutely. So that's why everything's been a little weird on our part, just for scheduling. But we are settling down again just in time to go to Mobile World Congress. By the way, that's Andrew Martinick and Russell Hawley.
Hey.
Hi.
Hi. How are you?
It's been a good week.
Well, no, I'm glad it's been a good week for you. I am glad. Sorry, I didn't mean that to sound so sarcastic. Glad you've had a good week, Russell.
Today was the first day I left the house.
Well, that's true. You had all the snow.
Yeah, we had 30 inches of snow, so I just kind of stayed in the house. And today, I finally got to leave and like go out and do something.
That's kind of been the big question. Like, if I'd gone to New York like I was supposed to last weekend, would any of this happen? I don't know. I have no idea.
Oh, I see. I think it probably would have still happened.
Yeah, maybe. So yeah, we've got Mobile World Congress coming up. We've got leaks aplenty and rumors galore. So I thought this week we might just kind of launch into some of them. What say you guys?
It's kind of hard to avoid them.
Nothing excites me like unconfirmed things to get excited about only to be disappointed later.
Well,
I mean you've been around here before.
Yeah, it is that time of year again. So let's start with, you know, the biggest of the bunch, and that'll be Samsung and the Galaxy S7. I mean, first off, ain't nothing official, right? We don't know that this is the GS7, but it'll be the GS7, right?
I hear it'll be phone-shaped.
Yes, it'll have a battery.
It would be a pretty gigantic departure if it wasn't the Galaxy S7. They could, at the last minute, change all the branding, all the boxes.
At some point, these guys are going to run into, you know, naming problems, right? I mean, maybe not today, but...
HTC's getting ready to go to the M10, right?
Sure. Maybe.
They should change it to the MX just to see.
I mean, we'll get to HTC in a minute, but, I mean, after a while, and I don't know, I always thought OS X had this problem, too. Like, after a while, you just get to some weird name. You know, are the Chinese companies going to skip 8, or it's just, or is 8?
Well, Huawei had a mate.
No, you're right. 8's a good number. What's the bad number?
A good one. 4s.
4, okay. So, it'll be Galaxy S7. I don't have a problem with that. But I mean, the big rumor right now, and even then, I don't think it's a very big stretch, is that we're looking at 3 phones, right?
Yeah, the interesting thing is they're going to kind of jump the gap here and do a small phone and a big phone at the same time under the Galaxy S7 name, which was kind of the weird thing last year that we got this Galaxy S6 Edge Plus because it's bigger, so it came out with the Note 5, but it was a Galaxy S6. And so it kind of put us on this weird 6-month cycle where we still had a Galaxy S6 and then an S6 Edge Plus 6 months later. And so now I think you know, it looks like they're going to bring that back into line. So you're actually going to get three phones at once here. And then, you know, that kind of, you wonder what they're going to fill that slot with on the Note later in the year, because, you know, you get three phones in the beginning of the year and one at the end. It might be a little funky.
I still think the original Note should have just been the phone last year. Just put everything behind that one device, because that's how good it was.
Yeah, and or depending on where you live, to the S6 Edge Plus.
Yes. Sorry, Europe.
Because that was kind of just your only option. But it was kind of odd with how similar the phones are that it wasn't just all released at once, like you said. There really weren't that many changes internally or externally other than the size. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, is that lining us up for a bigger change in the Note line at the end of the year after they release, you know, presumably three devices all at once under the Galaxy S7 name? I mean, I don't know. They've been pretty lockstep the last few years.
Do we even need a Note line anymore, Russell?
Sure. I mean, there's still tons of people who really rely on the stylus.
Well, just put it in the phone. Just make one line.
You want to make a Galaxy, just the S line, also have a stylus, yeah, and just be that. I mean, sure.
Because now the only differentiator is, you know, there's no longer the size, right? Because we have the Galaxy S6 Edge Plus, which is, you know, just a larger version without the stylus. So the
Note 5 was my favorite of the ones that were released, but there's still plenty of people who really like that smaller form factor. So if you're saying do away with the Note because you're doing these three phones, maybe.
Or do you mean getting rid of the name and just having multiple sizes? I mean, they could call it the Galaxy S7 Plus or something stupid like that.
I think you can have any combination of those. But yeah, like, if you don't use the stylus, don't use the stylus. I didn't use it. I still thought the Note was a better phone. I'm not sure. I mean, yeah, you can get away with a smaller phone like that, but I think Samsung proved they really couldn't because the battery life sucked. Just because the capacity wasn't any good for a screen that
dense. I don't know what you're talking about. Our forums are full of people who swear that they get 3 whole days out of that Galaxy S6.
Yeah, they're really wrong. No. You might, but you're not actually using it.
I mean, I think that might be part of the story this time around. If we're looking at having a Galaxy S7 launching along with the larger version at the exact same time, then, you know, you're going to be able to choose between the compact size, you give up that battery life, or the larger size and you get the better battery life. You're not going to have to wait 6 months again to get the larger versions later in the year.
I definitely think that it's cool that the options are going to be available at the same time, having the larger option and the smaller option. I am a little concerned that, and this is a really petty thing when I say it out loud, but it's still something that I'm going to keep focusing on because I guess I'm a petty person. It just means we're going to have fewer color options again.
Look, I'm 100% saying Samsung, not Samsung, but the U.S. carrier screwed up. If you didn't see that dark green last year.
Emerald green.
It was so pretty. It was
beautiful. They had a couple of colors that were amazing. The blue one I really liked. It wasn't as good as the green one, I don't think. But the colors, the ones that Andrew got pictures of last year were just fantastic, and we didn't get any of them. We still don't have any of them.
What's my Note? No, my Note 5 is the blue, right?
Yeah, that's the midnight blue, not the blue sapphire, which is the kind of the turquoise.
Okay,
maybe it is called turquoise, but the more turquoise colored, brighter blue one versus everywhere in the U.S. It was white, and then the midnight blue, and then a couple carriers later on got gold versions. And only in certain sizes, like, you know, you could get a gold 128 gig or something. And I think that Russell's point is a good one, that when you have multiple, you know, you're going to have three different versions coming out at once, you're just less likely to have multiple colors of each.
Yeah, because, I mean, that was the big thing from last year, was that the Galaxy S6 came out in, you know, two different versions and three SKUs for each version for the three colors. For each version, and so you just ended up with a tremendous amount of SKUs just to stock in a physical store. Sure. Was just impossible to maintain.
And we already saw that they didn't maintain it, and they started dropping, a lot of places dropped the 64 gig, right? So they would only carry 32 and 128, and some places never carried the 128 at all. It was pretty much you would just go get a 32 and just be happy that you had two color choices. I don't know if it's going to be an interesting situation where you know, you'll be able to get the standard one in one color and the other one in the other color, and, you know, like the Edge version in the other color.
Do you think this is part of
the problem with having the regular and the Edge at the same time.
Do you think we're going to see 128 gigabyte versions again?
I hope so. It was a pretty constant complaint with the Note that we never got 128 gig notes.
I don't know. I never got anywhere near close to using an 128.
I've got a 128 6P that has like 100 gigs free on it.
Yeah.
So.
Sure, there are plenty of people that aren't going to use them, but I think the people that go out and buy them, because it's the same thing with the iPhone. There's a small group of people that will go out and buy it just so that they never have to worry about it. And when we've got more and more phones shooting in 4K and, you know, supporting high quality audio, those people, their wallets are important.
Yeah, I mean, my big thing is I would hope that if they're going to cut one of the SKUs out, they cut out the 64 like a lot of carriers did. A lot of people, most people are going to be on the 32. More people probably bought the 128 than the 64. Because if you're going to spend the extra money, you understand that you want the extra storage. You just go all the way to 128. And it's going to be a small number of people anyway. So I would hope that if they cut any of the storages, to be the middle one, at least give the highest end people their choice.
Sure. Yeah, I would go with that.
But
that also brings in the discussion of SD cards at the same time. You know, if they were to bring back an SD card slot, how does that change their standings about the internal storage?
I'm still of the mind, for a number of reasons, that no SD card is better. And, I mean, we can rehash them.
I'm right there with you.
Yeah, I mean, we can rehash them yet again. One, it's probably cheaper. Two, it's fewer moving parts, so it's just simpler. Three, SD cards are inherently unsafe. Now, that's a little bit less of a thing if you're using it as adaptable storage, right?
Yeah. Okay.
When I say inherently unsafe, I mean insecure, just because of the way, you know, normal file structures go when you're not dealing with...
It's also less reliable.
Yep.
It's also another point in the phone that weakens the structure of the phone because it has to have another slot, and it's another point for water and dust and...
Here's what's going to happen. Samsung's going to put an SD card back in there, and people are going to put the cards in backwards.
Hey, here's the thing. Really quick tangent, though. So on this Honor 5X, you have two slots because it takes two SIMs and an SD card. And you have a hell of a time trying to figure out which slots are which and which way the cards go in, because there are these multi-use slots where it can be a mini SIM or an SD card and then the nano SIMs next to it. That's actually like a real thing.
It's not that.
But anyway.
I mean, here it is right here. I don't think it's
But you have two slots.
Well, yeah.
So, you know, normally you're used to one slot is SIM card, one slot is SD. Anyway.
I mean, they're different sizes, though.
But that's the problem.
I think, like,
the
it
nano
wouldn't hurt if
can
they
fit...
No, I mean, it wouldn't hurt if they labeled them a little better. I'm just saying, it's Samsung. People are going to be looking for something. They're going to shove the SD card in sideways or something. And
well, of course, this is how it always works, right? They take something away, people are mad. They bring something back, and then people are going to have a reason to be mad about that. I mean, the only thing that you can say about bringing an SD card slot back is that Alex wrote about this week. It was really awesome. Reminding people of this, you know, less known feature of adaptable storage in Marshmallow, in which the SD card just becomes part of the internal storage. But of course, this is going to be the point where people complain because they're not going to maybe understand what's going on. They're used to being able to just take the SD card in and out.
Right.
Adaptable storage, you put the SD card in there and it is not meant to be removed because it is now part of the internal storage from a system standpoint. And you can't hot swap that in and out. You can't take it out and put it in a computer and pull off your files and put it back in there. And at that point, you know, I understand why that's a cool implementation if like 6 months down the road you decide you want more storage and don't want to buy a new phone. But for somebody, if you're planning from the start, how often is this adaptable storage with an SD card better than just having more internal storage?
I don't think it is.
It is either.
Actually,
if you're buying a 32 gig phone planning to put a 64 gig SD card in it, to use as adoptable storage, in which you're never going to take that SD card back out, you need to just buy the higher capacity phone from the start and not bother with, you know, having an SD card that's going to crap out on you after 9 months of being used as adoptable storage, which I wish we had Jerry on to talk about that. But, so, you know, that's a issue.
Here's the line from the compatibility, was it compatibility definition document, whatever. I mean, this is what Google, if you want to use Google services, what they say you need to do. It says device implementations are strongly recommended, and these are, you know, quasi-legal terms that they're using, very specific terms, strongly recommended to implement adoptable storage if the removable storage device port is in a long-term stable location, such as within the battery compartment or other protective cover. I would almost argue that's not strong enough.
Right.
For the reasons you were just saying.
I mean, basically what they're saying is, if it's under the battery cover, or, you know, which not a lot of phones have battery covers anymore, but if it's in a more secure spot like that, so like this Honor 5X, terrible for adoptable storage because the SD card slot shares a slot with the SIM, and there is a very good chance in which you are going to remove the SIM and at the same time remove the SD card, and bad things happen because you're not supposed to remove this SD card.
I would argue that is not a long-term stable location.
Right. So, and you know, there's a lot of phones use one slot for the SD card and the SIM. I mean, I think about like the Shield TV that just has, you know, a little push button. It's not even behind a flap or anything. It's just sitting there. You know, I think that it's going to take a lot of explanation to people that people are used to being able to swap SIM cards or SD cards, put them in a little adapter to stick them in their computer, etc. You know, repurpose them later. But this is not like that. You're committing this SD card to that phone.
What do you think, Russell? Are they going to do it or not?
I hope they do it. I think that there's, you know, while you guys raise some pretty valid arguments as far as function, I feel like there are just way too many people who are going to want to take advantage of it. And I don't know what the solution is. Part of me looks at the Note 5 and there's no way I would ever see taking this design and including something that you can open and safely put an SD card in. And, you know, so that, you know, involves switching the design. And I really like the direction that Samsung went with the design for the Note line. I think it's unique. I think it feels comfortable when I hold it. I like it a lot better than I like the S6 line. I really hope that this is what we see at least for the next year from Samsung as far as their design language goes. And if that means not having an SD card, then so be it.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope that they can stick on this design language as well, because I think it's what they did with the S6 and the Note 5 is too good to just scrap it for the next generation just to be different. You know, be different from the previous generation. They have a lot of good stuff they built on. I mean, the only thing I can say as far as, you know, being able to get another slot in there is that they did move things around quite a bit to put the slots in different places when they did the Edge phones. You know, they moved things from the side to the top, and I could see them, you know, being able to make it work. But, I mean, here's the thing. We'll never know what design trade-offs they made if they were to try to fit another SD, you know, an SD card slot in there, or, you know, whatever other feature.
Removable battery?
No. Are you kidding me? Stop.
No. You don't get to have a beautiful device like the S6 Edge Plus and have a removable battery. It's just those things are incompatible.
Phones that we've had over the last year, they've all had sealed batteries and they've all been perfectly fine. Some of them, you know, the S6 hasn't had enough battery capacity to get you through the day, but a removable battery slot wasn't going to fix that, because the battery that you put in there would also be too small. I mean, and so you'd end up with one of those horrible case things that straps onto the back, which already got made for the phone anyway. So the end result would not have been any different.
Yeah, you don't get to have this really thin metal design with sweeping curves and the thinness and lightness and everything, and have the battery be removable. I mean, especially if that's going to give you like a 10% battery haircut or something like that. I mean, the Note 5 offers enough battery life, but if you were to trim that by 10%, you know, it's all of a sudden you're back in a rough territory. So you don't want them to drop the drop the battery size to get it to be removable. It's just not worth it.
I picked up the LG G4 this week again and got it back in working order. Just it'd been a long time since I used it. We probably have the G5 coming at MWC, so I wanted to use it some more. And first, I miss the feel of this thing. But this has a removable battery. I have a spare battery for it. But my thing with removable batteries has always been, oh, God, now I got to make sure it's charged.
And you have one of those little charging docks.
Yeah.
It's just one more thing to manage.
For me, it's easier to just plug the damn phone in and charge it up if I need to, especially now that we have quick charge, and that makes such a difference.
And I mean, I carry around a mobile battery when I think I need one, and it can charge my Note 5, it can charge my Nexus 6P, it can charge my hotspot, it can charge my friend's phone, if I'm carrying around a replaceable battery, removable battery for my Galaxy S5 or something, it can only charge that phone, and that's it.
So here's probably the more interesting question to me, and we were, I think it was last night, we were all hashing this out a little bit. USB-C or no USB-C?
I hope that they go forward with USB-C. And I mean that about all the manufacturers. I've been so happy with the way that it's worked on the phones that I've used over the past year. And I think I started using it a little earlier than everyone else last year.
Yep. Yeah, you used it on the OnePlus 2.
Yeah, the OnePlus 2, and then Asus had it in a tablet. So I had kind of jumped in a little earlier than everyone. But I'm really happy with the standard. I think they've done a lot of good stuff with it, and I hope that Samsung takes advantage of it.
I hope so, too. We were trying to talk about it. I brought up the point about Samsung trying micro USB 3.0 on the Note 4. And I thought that, that was a point where they jumped onto something. And even last year, it was a pretty big deal for them to jump on Qi and PowerMat wireless charging in the same device. But I'm wondering if that's maybe a situation in which they kind of got burned by micro USB 3.0 being, not adopted anywhere else in the world. And maybe that'll keep them from going to C. But I think that with other people getting out and getting USB-C first, maybe they're willing to do it. It's right on the edge there where they might not have seen enough adoption at the time that they started, having to put their foot down on the connector.
Yeah.
That they might have stuck with micro. And I mean, the problem with that is that if they don't put it in the Galaxy S7, it's probably not going to be in the next Note, which means we'd be waiting till this time next year for USB-C, which would be a bit much.
I would like to see them be able to use the same Gear VR for the GS6, for the Note 5, as we use in this next, 10 months of phones.
So you want them to keep micro USB?
I tell you, I want them to use C, but
I mean,
I think it would be good for Gear VR. I think it would be good for VR as a platform to have that consistency running through one more generation.
I mean, when I look at it, I think about they did a lot of things to be able to bring Gear VR to, mass market at $99. Switching phones, you're talking about a $700 purchase. Switching VR headsets is a $100 purchase. Not to, belittle, that's an expensive accessory, but the more expensive switch is buying the phone.
Sure.
I think that the Gear, they have shown no issue, to have no issue with rolling out different Gear VR headsets.
And, it's conceivable that a new edition of Gear VR for USB-C wouldn't be that big a deal for them manufacturing-wise.
Not at all.
Yeah, so they have to change it up, and it's not a huge deal for them and a huge expenditure. It means, we'd have to buy a new one, so be it.
I like the fact that they brought the price down. They made it, they flipped around the USB ports the right way, so everything fits now. I just don't think that that's that big of a worry. I mean, there's a bigger worry from my standpoint of them sticking with micro USB until this time next year than there is with asking, let's be honest, a relatively small portion of their phone buyers to buy a new headset.
Sure.
Because with the growth curve of Gear VR, there are more people in which the new Gear VR will be their first Gear VR headset than will be replacing an existing Gear VR headset. I mean, there's just not that big of an install base now to worry about it, I don't think. And presumably, you're getting on a standard in which it will be the standard for a while. But the problem is, if it's not for the USB-C standpoint, it's going to be for, you know, just the design is different enough that it's not going to fit in there. I mean, that could very well be the issue that keeps it from plugging in, not the port.
How about processor? I don't particularly care whether it's Snapdragon 820 or Exynos or whatever. Like, that just doesn't.
So the rumor has it that they're going to go back to using a mix of Qualcomm and Exynos depending on the market, right?
Yeah, because Samsung is actually doing the heavy lifting for Qualcomm this year for manufacturing the Snapdragon 820.
And they manufacture a lot of other people's as well. You know, Samsung knows how to make chips, you know, whether they're own branded or somebody else's.
I mean, if you ask me what was in the GS6 or the Note 5 at this point, I'd have to go look it up. Like, it just hasn't affected me at all.
Right. The GS6 was, you know, it was just a notable change that it was all Exynos no matter where you went, versus the Note 4, which was Snapdragon in the US and Exynos elsewhere. You know, that is the case going back. And the only question about this would be, I mean, obviously Samsung has said over and over that, you know, they compete with themselves. You know, they're not going to choose their own processor or give themselves a good deal. You know, these are very separate business units. They're going to fight with themselves over, you know, if Qualcomm can give them a better deal on chips with good performance and they don't think that they can do that with their own chips, you know, to the same scale, you know, why don't you just mix them up? But it's just very interesting that they would go back to it after, you know, clearly having no problem making them for all of the GS6s and Note 5s and various variants all around the world, all had the same exact processor. It's just odd that they would go back to it. I would love to know that backstory.
RAM, does it? Do we care? I mean, just, I don't know.
Four gigs.
This was a huge argument last year because Samsung put 4 gigs of RAM in the Note, and there was an expectation there that it was going to be this performance powerhouse as a result, because a lot of people still don't understand how RAM works in Android phones. And it wound up that, you know, because Samsung does things differently, that you know, it felt like there were performance differences when it came to switching back and forth between apps on a phone that had 4 gigs of RAM.
And you're talking and software differently.
Yeah, yeah, to the way that Samsung, you know, handles cache and things like that. And so I don't think that's going to be any different with the next version of the Samsung software. You know, they're still going to continue to manage cache the way that they managed it with the previous version. We do have a lot of unanswered questions about how they're going to handle a lot of the new stuff that came from Marshmallow, and that could end up being interesting. But I think that RAM management is one of those things that is unlikely to change.
I mean, the biggest thing we've talked about is you may not like how it works, but it's working as intended right now. They're getting the performance out of these phones, you know, just talking about the Note 5 now, they're getting the performance out of that phone that they want to get out of that amount of RAM and that processor. You may not like how it manages things, but it's definitely working the way Samsung wants it to. And I mean, you just look at the difference. People kind of went crazy about how quick the Galaxy S6 was. You know, this is before people started worrying about RAM as much. I guess the Note 5 really kicked that off, but the GS6 was extremely quick with the same amount of RAM as the Note 4, which is, you know, released 6 months earlier. But, you know, it's because they were doing different amounts of optimization on it. And people thought that was really awesome and it was super fast. And then all of a sudden they turned out that they didn't like that. But if you were to say, okay, well, we'll do it the way you want it, but your camera won't launch as fast anymore and your home screen is going to redraw sometimes and certain apps won't perform right, people might not take that trade-off.
But damn, that camera starts fast.
It really does. It does a lot of things really, really fast that most people really, really want to be fast.
I wrote Sunday about EMUI and why I think, you know, all the weird stuff that goes on and all the weird alerts and notices. I mean, it really goes back to battery life at all costs. And it's almost like Samsung kind of does the same thing. It's like, okay, here are the things we want to work really well and really fast, and everything else just kind of has to take a back seat a little. I mean, that's...
I have no problem with that standpoint, actually.
I get that people will disagree with it, but that's a decision. It's a decision they made for a reason.
Because think about what the bulk of people do. They want to be able to double press that home button and have the camera launch and take a picture extremely quickly. If you see any Samsung ad, they pound that into your head as much as possible, that the camera is extremely fast and extremely good, which we know to be the case. People want to be able to go to their, unlock their phone and have their home screen be really quick, have the settings be really quick, move between a handful of their, favorite apps quickly. The Note 5 does all that. The GS6 does all of that. It really only falls apart, in kind of more synthetic tests.
Yeah. I think that's it for me for the GS7. I mean, I expect the display to be awesome just because, right?
I would expect nothing less. Yeah. And Samsung just completely kills everybody.
Not to glaze over that, but like they're also good.
I mean, there's still nothing like it. I mean, we've got the Galaxy S6 and the Note 5 and all the other phones that came out this past year. Like, there are a couple that are pretty good, but none of them are on a level to actually actively compete with what Samsung has done with their displays over the last year.
Mm-hmm.
We talked a little bit. I wrote a thing a couple days ago about security updates. Just because Samsung is one of the few that has, consistently put out a blog post every month since we started doing these monthly updates. We just haven't necessarily gotten the updates on the phones, and they're not the only ones who are guilty of this. HTC's done the same thing. LG, I'm not sure, has said anything, which might be smarter. I'm not sure.
They're busy trying to tout Marshmallow coming out to some people in Poland.
Sure.
I think.
But yeah, it's do you think we're going to see that get any better, or is that just going to be business as usual?
I mean, I don't think that's going to be in any way tied to the announcement of the phone, because I just don't think that they've figured out how they're going to handle that.
It's not an easy problem to solve. Let me be clear about that.
No. And I mean, especially because, we're talking about, okay, how are we going to start backporting this to devices in which we released a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, at most. But still, you're talking about a device that was never intended to be updated on a monthly basis.
Sure.
They don't have the processes in, set up to be doing that.
In the way, of course.
And then even if they did have everything set up to roll out monthly updates for the Galaxy S5, or the Note 4, probably, more aptly, then they have to run it into the carriers and, dozens of carriers around the world that they have to talk to, because every phone is a little different and every process is a little different. So I would expect that to be a different discussion beyond that, but one we should have at the top of our minds when we look at a Galaxy S7.
Right.
That's the thing I kind of hope we see less of this year, is the wildly different user experience across carriers. Because that was something, Samsung is the only one that we had this, it may not be an issue, but this discrepancy with last year, where the Verizon version of the Galaxy S6, the UI was wildly different from what you guys were seeing on AT&T and T-Mobile. And it took us like a week to figure out what all the differences were, because Verizon and Samsung weren't telling anybody anywhere. They were just like, hey, have this phone. And when I talked to people at Verizon, they weren't even aware that there were differences. This was as far as they were aware what the Galaxy S6 was supposed to look like.
I mean, even just the settings being laid out differently, buttons being in different places, some apps being replaced, others not. It was very, very odd.
Or apps gone entirely. The Samsung browser didn't show up on my Note 5 until, I think, 2 months ago. It just wasn't there at launch.
Feature.
Yeah.
Not a bug. I want to move off the GS7 some, and again, we're expecting this at Mobile World Congress at the end of February in Spain. We will be there.
It's coming up.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy. It's going to be fun. I mean, that said, Samsung hasn't scheduled an event yet, so maybe it'll happen, maybe it won't. One company that has scheduled an event is LG. That'll be on the 21st. We are expecting, that is 20, yeah, Sunday. Yep. We are expecting the G5. Although even that's not official yet. Their teaser was just like a music box. And
LG is always a little funky with teasers. They kind of get out in front of things to try to tease things, but you know, we're closing in a few weeks out here.
I don't know. I mean, look, LG tends to announce things before they show, you know, before they announce things. So I think pretty soon we'll see some more, hey, look how great this new camera we developed is, and look how great this new screen we developed is, and here's this new battery stuff we developed. I mean, that's kind of their MO. But we have seen a couple of actual leaks. Droid Life got pictures of what looks like an engineering device in a lunchbox. That's one of those, you know, plastic shells to either hide the actual design or just to house components when they're testing components. You can't see too much. I mean, you can see USB-C. That's awesome. That's good. Looks like microphone and speaker down at the bottom. Fine. You know, side SIM. Up front, kind of hard to tell a little bit what's going on. Front-facing camera, speaker, whatever. But on back is where it really starts to get interesting, because there's been talk of two cameras on the back. Which, okay, and it's tough to tell from these holes you see in there. And at the same time, we had a case manufacturer put out its renders, which are very renderific. And at the same time, like looking at those, it almost looks like camera lens on one side. Maybe
it looks like some kind of weird flash arrangement.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like a flash on the left, like two-tone flash, and then like a laser thing or something in the middle. Like, you wouldn't just have one lens offset like that. That doesn't make sense. It sort of matches up with what Droid Life had, but not really.
And then a fingerprint sensor, very much like the Nexus 5X.
Yeah.
Which would make
sense. I can't believe that not a one of you mentioned that there are no volume buttons
right.
or tower button on the back.
I was
which
getting
to
there.
Me
Hallelujah.
Is basically an act of war.
Nope, they do not belong back there.
You are so, like, look, fine, I get it. Other phones have not been able to pull it off, but I love that design on LG phones.
I just give it to LG for being a solid differentiator. That's what they picked it up and they just stuck with it.
And even on the V10, they made it work. No, they made it work, and they made it work well. I love it.
Although we know that on the V10, it does not work.
It did not work on the V10. It mostly, okay,
in
it
most
mostly
ways,
worked on the V10.
It was too big, and it didn't work with a fingerprint sensor.
The V10 didn't work well. Let's not
sure.
blame that on the rear key.
Right, the rear key did not work with the size and the design of that phone, and also with the fingerprint sensor. Those are real issues.
If I have to go back to side volume and power, and these cases for mobile phone look like that's the case, or maybe the power button is the fingerprint sensor, but the volume rocker would move to the side. I don't know. Not the end of the world. I think I would miss it. But again, LG has proven time and time again they're not afraid to blow things up,
and they're not afraid to do just kind of wacky stuff.
Yeah. So
I don't know. It just feels like LG was one of the first companies to be like, hey, check out how we have almost no bezel around our screen on these phones. And it worked really well for them.
And then Samsung was like, LOL, we have a smaller bezel and buttons on the side where they belong. I mean, that was really cool when they did the G2. But we're 3 years later now. And I think they're going to have to come up with something else other than this is just how we do it. Which I guess that's a valid reason, because if you want to be that way. But they're going to have to come up with something else that explains why they belong back there still. Because technology has gone further.
I haven't really seen anything in any of these leaks that like get me excited yet, which is fine. That's not a bad thing. That's just saying not a whole lot is leaked yet, so that's good. The camera stuff will be interesting. But
with LG, we know you're going to get fast hardware. Hopefully, it looks like they're going to step away from plastic and things. But yeah, the software is the big question. Nobody's questioning that you're going to get a great camera experience from an LG phone nowadays. They're questioning whether the software can step up its game.
It has to. It really does. I mean, it's funny. Every time I pick up the G4 now, I'm like, oh, I miss this phone. I really do like this phone. I could probably go back to not having a fingerprint scanner just because I love the size. I love the feel of it. But then, like, the Wi-Fi cuts out still.
Yeah, well. You
know, it's still not on Marshmallow. I mean, I expect the G5 to launch with Marshmallow. But it's like, just come on. They're so close. Again. But not quite. Oh, come on, LG.
Yep.
Who else? HTC. Evan Blass, EV Leaks, Ev Leaks. Had some M10 stuff today, actually. Marshmallow, Sense 8. Neither of those are a surprise. 5.1 inches, that could be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, HTC has kind of kept it, I mean, it just in general, has kept its screen size down, but to go down and stay down at 5.1?
They're also talking about a design that is kind of similar to the A9, which... Yeah,
and we have very much heard the same sort of talk, yes.
I'm a fan of that. I really liked the design of the A9.
I just didn't like how flat it was.
They made it work. I mean, so the flatness worked because it was so small.
Right.
I don't know that if it got bigger, that would work.
Yeah.
So is that kind of indicating that HTC has actually sold a decent number of A9s?
I think that would be
pretty cool if that were the case, but...
I mean, do you really think that they would stick with that same design? I mean, I guess they're a very proud design company, but
do you really think that
they would stay with that design if they didn't see it working?
I think that was decided before the A9 went on sale. The A9, I mean, it's been, we're talking like 2 months.
It hasn't been 2 months, has it? That was back in October.
Okay, November, December, we're in January, so, 3 months, but still. That's what I think.
So, yeah, the decision would have had to have been made beforehand.
Actually, the big question here is, with the M10, like, HTC hasn't scheduled anything either, and we don't know that they're going to. So
the bigger thing is, how is this actually going to work? How is it going to be marketed? How is it going to be actually sold?
I mean, that's always been their problem, right?
Yeah. Well, it hasn't necessarily been the product. I mean, sure, the products have had issues, but they've underperformed in the market relative to their quality.
I don't know that was true of last year. The M9 had some legitimate problems when it launched, and they have never really got fixed.
Yeah, but do you really think that... Well, I mean, I guess we don't know raw sales numbers.
No, I mean... And
you just don't see them in the wild. The phone doesn't really exist the way... Definitely not the way the M7 did, or even the way the M8 did.
Well, and a little bit of inside baseball, but I think what they present to reviewers needs to be more finished than what we saw last year. That was a big part of the problem, was we had all these mixed messages about what was finished software and what wasn't. And the timing of all that got really weird, and just... They can't afford to have that sort of message again. It's got to be consistent, whether it's consistently good or consistently bad, I don't know. But it's got to be more consistent than it is now.
I agree. And also, something needs to be done to keep them from being like, hey, so this is the best thing we've ever done, and have it actually be a visible step backwards from the previous experience, like the display.
Sure.
The display on the M9, they really bragged about that when it first came out, and I still think the M8 display was better.
Yeah.
It is.
Absolutely. I'm excited for them. I mean, just because I am, but man, when you got companies like Huawei out there doing so well now, in a lot of spaces...
Well, and I think that you've just, HTC, like I said, there are a lot of M7s out there and a lot of people upgrading from M7s that did not buy an M8 or an M9 or an A9. They switched, they were done. And so they got to get those people back.
They need to do whatever they need to do to be successful enough to give me a Vive.
Yeah. Not happening.
New strategy.
Maybe. Well, not give. I mean, I will gladly pay for one, but they need to become available and continue to be supported.
Give me the ability to buy one.
There right.
You go. Do you see them going all the way? So Vive is available, what, in April? Do you see them? Yeah, I could see them doing like a March phone event, and then April will be VR, and that way they get a couple news cycles.
No, no, because those are going to be wildly different things, and Valve is going to take lead on the Vive being released.
Yeah.
Like, Valve and Steam VR is going to be the big headline there, because that's the thing we don't know anything about when it comes to the Vive, is the operating system, like how that interface works. They don't talk about that at all right now.
Sure.
And it's just not, I mean, all the way through, HTC just, they deal with Vive in a different way than they deal with, you know, their phones and things. You know, there's not an inherent tie-in like with Samsung and Gear VR.
That is true. Any other companies we can think of? Sony announced a press conference.
Yeah, Sony usually, you know, we got new tablets last time and some low-end and mid-range phones last time.
I tell you, I'm in the market for a tablet. I'm kind of down on the
Yeah,
Nexus 9.
Let's talk about that.
Well, so I had to RMA my Pixel C. It got a crack in the glass, and I just don't know how. Like, literally, I walked from the bathroom, which is on the other side of this wall, to back to my office, like 10 feet, and got a crack in it somehow. And
you definitely know how.
I have no idea how.
You definitely do. So this is what happens when you... This is sand-scored glass.
That's true.
This is, you know, it's really right up in that corner where you first started showing pictures of getting the scratches from moving it on and off of the...
You've been rubbing metal on the screen with bits of dust in between the glass and the metal. I mean, that's precisely how you break glass.
I've been you know, waiting in the forums to see if anybody else is mentioning that. It's also the corner where the processor is and it gets hot up there. I don't know if that matters.
No, I'm sure that it does, yeah. I mean, it's sand-scored glass and heat. That sounds like exactly how you broke it, or how it got broke.
So I'm back on the Nexus 9, which is still just kind of a clunky. And I like size-wise, I like it better.
And yours looks like it's been dropped off the back of a truck.
Yeah. Seriously, that thing looks like it's been through a war zone.
My Nexus 9 has ridden the world. Well, I mean, look, the thing's a year and a half old now almost.
Sure.
But yeah, it's, you know, the software.
So you started
still
asking me about, you know, different, you know, asking me about the Shield tablet and asking me about the Galaxy Tab S2.
And I want something because I've got that Project Phi data sim that I want to use.
Yep, which I use in my Shield tablet, but I pointed out that they don't make it anymore.
Yeah, thanks for like waiting 10 minutes before telling me that, by the way.
I still didn't quite understand at this point what Phil was looking for, and I was like, oh yeah, it works great with the Shield tablet.
Why can't I? There's no buy link for that. What? Oh, you can't buy it anymore. Thanks, Andrew. Thanks for pointing that out first.
But I was saying, Galaxy Tab S2, it's a really good tablet.
I just don't know if you can justify that much money.
But it's expensive. They have they did cut the price around the holidays, but I don't think that price stuck around. I mean, it's like the 8-inch one's $350 or $400 for the 8-inch tablet.
I mean, I could get another Nexus 9 with LTE for like $300 on Amazon.
Right, right. Oh, actually, I think $350 might have been the Wi-Fi version. I think it's pretty expensive. It's pretty standard. LTE adds, you know, $100 or whatever on top of the already pretty expensive. But you were saying from a standpoint of you want to be able to use it as a hotspot.
Right.
Not just have it, you know, for your own enjoyment. I mean, what I use my Shield tablet as. It's a gigantic hotspot that can also, you know, do other things.
Yeah, that goes back to, I normally use a USB stick on Verizon for data when we're on the road, because cutting out Wi-Fi is smart when you're in a room with 5,000 people. But the problem is they're slick new their slick new USB stick that I use in which is all of like 4 months old doesn't work on El Capitan, whatever OS X version this is. What are we on?
What?
Now?
Yeah. Why?
I don't know.
Because Verizon uses like a special little bit of software to manage it.
What am I on?
It's 10, not 11, just 3. Plain. It's not just plain. You know, USB Ethernet. They have a little bit of control manager or something or another.
But that's what this was. You plug it in and you pull it up in your browser. You don't need their little Verizon software anymore. I think I saw somebody said something about signed for USB is different now, or the way OS X handles it in LCAP. It doesn't work, and Verizon's still selling them. And it's not
a 9.7-inch Tab S2 with LTE is $500. If you buy it from AT&T.
Right, right. Well, that's the other thing. Like,
so
I just
without
want to
a
unlock
contract or something, it's going to be like $650.
Exactly.
Probably.
And you know,
but I mean, this is the problem. I mean, we talk about not having unlocked phones. Like, unlocked LTE tablets are really the unicorn.
Even worse.
Because, you know, people, other than the iPad, people don't really buy LTE tablets in any decent volume. Well, I mean, because you're talking about a subset of a very small number of devices anyway. But The only way AT&T gets people to buy them is they put them on their plan for $25 a month on installment or something. They're not trying, you know, Samsung's not selling Tab S2s direct for $750 or whatever. It's just it's a losing proposition.
I mean, I haven't quite gone that far, but I'm not going iPad. I'm just not. I mean, I should get a new
iPad Mini is a fantastic hotspot.
What's that?
I said an iPad Mini is a fantastic hotspot.
Yeah, it is. I mean, that's the thing.
They have strong radios, huge batteries. But in the same, I mean, in the same way that, you know, my Shield tablet's a great hotspot too. Yeah.
What's the iPad Mini 4? Are we up to the fourth one already?
Yeah. That's the thing. If you just want a hotspot, you buy an iPad Mini 2 for $200.
Yeah. I don't want an iPad. I really don't.
Yeah, but that is the whole point. You want something that can pull double duty. And like you said, at this point, I don't know, buy a Nexus 7 LTE or something for $130.
iPad Mini 4 is $529 for cellular.
Yep.
iPad Mini 2, can't believe I'm saying any of this out loud. It's so wrong.
In a recorded environment.
I don't know if they sell the LTE.
It's $449. It's not that much cheaper. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, Nexus 9 I can get cheaper and actually use. I'm just going to sit on it for a while, I think. There's the question. If they came out with an LTE Pixel C, would I get it?
No. Why? No. Because the whole point here is that you're consolidating, right? You're having two devices that you would normally use consolidated into one. Adding LTE to a Pixel C is adding one device that you would use to one that you do not want to use.
That's true.
I mean, and you know, you are a person who carries around a tablet.
Yeah. I like tablets. I like using tablets.
I'm not a person that carries one around normally.
I like traveling.
You know, it's another pound in my bag that I don't want.
Anyway. Let's do some Q&A. Then we'll get out of here.
Let's solve Phil's problems every podcast.
Is there any other shopping we can do on the podcast? Do you need a new hat or?
I do actually. I need some more pants. We'll tackle all that on next week's podcast. This week we discuss Phil's pants. Let's do some Q&A. And by the way, I think we can do a couple of emails too. podcast@androidcentral.com. Now that we are getting back into a relatively consistent swing of things, send us your email, send us your voicemail, record your voice and send it in. podcast@androidcentral.com, and we will get to that. But first, Q&A. Aaron wants to know, I had an AT&T Note 4 on Cricket, and I never got updates until I got a prepaid GoPhone SIM just for the 4 updates I was behind. Yeah, it's...
Yeah, AT&T is weird like that. They need an AT&T SIM to get those updates if it is an AT&T phone.
Verizon's the same way, but Verizon's different just because. But yeah, I hate that. Like, if you can't
It was still that way, but it is.
Yeah, if you can't update without a SIM in there, just no. And again, buy Nexus, right? I hate to be that guy, but...
I mean,
just buy unlocked. Don't, you know, I mean, that's one thing you can say to Aaron is, you know, you bought an AT&T phone. You may not be using it on AT&T. You're using it on their prepaid Cricket carrier, but you bought an AT&T phone. Look at the back of the phone.
Okay. But how is an average user supposed to know that? Like,
they're not.
They walk into a Cricket store. There should be some kind of expectation there.
Well, there are no Cricket stores.
Kevin says, I'm late to the show. I would like to ask Andrew if his opinions have changed somewhat about the Honor 5X after using it a bit more.
I'm reading the rest of the question, too.
And are there any rumblings about Marshmallow? Yeah, I heard an update may drop the 31st, but is EMUIBAD?
No, my opinions have not changed. I mean, I used the Honor 5X for like a week and a half before writing up the review. I feel the same now. I've been doing comparisons to like the OnePlus X, the Zenfone 2. I'm going to do a comparison to the Moto G. It just has not changed. The software is still really clunky and the performance is just not very good. And the camera is just not that great. So it stinks because everything that I did not just list there is great. So the screen is good. The hardware is good. The internal should be capable. You know, there's no reason why a Snapdragon 615 should be this laggy and slow. It's not on other phones. I mean, the Snapdragon 615 is not great, but it's not this slow.
I tell you, I would...
Yes, Marshmallow is coming, but until it arrives and we see that it's dramatically changed everything, we don't know.
I could come around more to EMUI just as a user interface, except except for all those things, like on top of you know, just an okay camera, and I completely agree that it's laggy because of the way it's set up. Like I could come around. I'm real close to like wanting to like this phone. I love the hardware. I think it's great hardware for a $200 phone. But yeah,
and I don't have a problem with the design of the software. Like they should be commended for the fact that you go anywhere in the software and it's all consistent and it all looks the way they want it to look. It's the problem is how it works.
Yeah.
I mean, I have no problem with it. I mean, the thing ships with Google Keyboard and you can put a launcher on it. Like that gets rid of a lot of the stuff that people may not like at first glance, but it's the things you find out that you don't like 3-4 days into it. That you just can't fix.
On the other hand, it has fingerprint, and I don't think any of the other picks, like on our best cheap phones list, have that yet.
You don't get a fingerprint at this price, fingerprint sensor, but I would gladly take putting in my pin or pattern every single time to unlock the software on the OnePlus X and use that every single day, because it's fast and really, really good. So, I mean... It's nice. You get a lot of value in that hardware, but I really wish that they would have spent money, you know, on the performance side.
Denny thinks 128 gigabytes is a waste in a smartphone. I use 64 gigabytes, and I think most use that size or 32 gigabytes. You have to think of price as well. Look, I mean, these manufacturers know what people are buying. They know what people are using. They know how much storage people are actually using on these phones. You ask anyone who actually works for any of these companies, and they'll tell you, yes, for most people, 128 gigabytes is way too much. And that probably includes me, for that matter.
Also, when you utter the sentence, I use this, and I think that's what everyone else does, you're already wrong.
Yeah.
That you need some data to back it up.
Ask anyone at any kind, you know, anyone who deals with that sort of thing. They know.
I mean, I think that specifically talking about Samsung not having the different versions available, I think that was more of just, it's really hard to stock like 10 different SKUs of every phone in every store everywhere around the world than an issue of nobody's buying it, so we're not going to sell it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you have to keep in mind that like Verizon and T-Mobile and Sprint, they buy these phones from Samsung and then put them in their stores. So they have to make a decision based on what they think is going to sell in a reasonable quantity. And I think it's sad that we didn't get like we did with previous Samsung phones where like Best Buy got a special color 3 months later or something like that.
And, you know, a lot of this would be, I don't know about solved, but mitigated if Samsung just sold that unlocked U.S. Compatible version right from the online store and they don't have to stock a store. You could pick out your emerald green 128 gig and have that shipped to your house. I mean, in 2015, the only unlocked one we got in the U.S. was an AT&T and T-Mobile compatible blue 32 gig GS6 was the only phone you could buy unlocked. And that's just not they could kill two birds with one stone if they were to ramp that up.
I would really love Samsung to do that, but they're not good.
Yep.
Remember when they were doing developer editions on Verizon?
Yep. Hmm. And I mean, their online store is good for everything else, buying tablets, buying accessories, buying laptops, phones from carriers. But like I said, one color, one version of one phone unlocked is not the way to do it.
Joe wants to know, out of name brands, do you think SanDisk is to blame for people believing SD cards will fail?
What?
No.
No. Absolutely not.
SanDisk wants you to believe that their cards will never fail.
I'm going to totally jinx myself here, but I don't think I've ever had an SD card just flat out fail on me.
Is he trying to say that, I mean, SanDisk trumpets their own quality so much that they make it seem like all other non-SanDisk cards will fail and therefore people have bad feelings about SD cards?
No.
I think that's maybe his angle, but I mean, that's just not a real... I mean, of course, some percentage of every manufacturer is going to fail.
It's
just all about quality assurance.
Yeah, they're testing. Small, cheap, mass-produced things.
Well, and SD cards are designed to fail over time.
Yeah.
That's how flash storage works.
And that's part of the reason why adoptable storage is worrisome, because it's now part of your phone and it will, you know, statistically fail more often than the internal storage in your phone. And there are problems with that. But I don't think people are worried about SD cards failing. There are other issues with SD cards beyond them failing.
Joe also wants to know, if Google is seriously concerned about fragmentation, why doesn't it give manufacturers early versions of the newest update? Like they did for the Nexus manufacturers. Notice how LG and Huawei have Marshmallow and other devices.
They do. All of their partners have access to an early channel for software, both for major version updates and for their monthly security patches. We get an email all the time now saying that, you know, our partners have had access to this software for X number of days when they tell us about an update.
So
that already happens.
And he notes LG and Huawei having Marshmallow out. LG and Huawei have like the smallest rollout of Marshmallow available. HTC crushes them on the number of devices that have Marshmallow, and they don't.
And again, remember,
make a phone this year.
You have the Mate 8 over here with one version of EMUI that is on top of Marshmallow, but is more broken than 5.1 on the Honor 5X. So
and Phil's G4 is still running Lollipop.
Yeah.
But you can go buy an A9. With Marshmallow on it, or have an M9 that was updated to Marshmallow.
Yeah, look, HTC did well there.
Yep, absolutely.
It'll be interesting. Our pal JR Rayfield does his update report card. And I kind of think, especially now, it's sort of a moot point because manufacturers are... they're kind of playing both ends against the middle a little bit. Like, yeah, it's like pushing out Marshmallow to one region. Or one country in one region.
We did it first.
Yeah.
Poland.
Well,
yeah.
Great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I kind of feel the same about congratulating Huawei on fixing EMUI, you know, fixing Google notifications on the Honor 5X. Congratulations for doing what you should have done years ago.
Okay. And they're still kind of funky, but.
Yeah.
They
need to keep some perspective on this stuff.
Yeah, making things less broken is not really cause for applause.
I think that's going to do it for the Q&A. For me. Oh, Derek has a good question. Do you guys know of any unlocked phones that support AT&T enhanced LTE services like VoLTE? I understand the unlocked A9 does, but I'm more interested in a flagship.
A9's borderline flagship-y, but anyway, if you don't like the A9... That's a tough one because it has to go through some kind of AT&T certification, right? Because then it identifies you put an AT&T SIM in it and downloads the little bits that you need for it.
Unlocked BlackBerry Priv will do it.
Will it?
Yeah, because when you put the SIM card in,
right.
It does the whole reboot thing and downloads all of the stuff that
Android is talking about. It pulls down the bits and it does the same for T-Mo.
Yeah, it's for every carrier, both U.S. Right. and international. It's the same for Verizon and everything else. It's actually kind of cool. I wish that more companies would do that. So you put the SIM card in and it goes, hey, I got a reboot. And then you get the badge for your carrier when it turns back on.
That's how the iPhones handle it, too.
Yep.
So the answer there is A9 or BlackBerry Priv or iPhone 6S.
There's an enhanced voice button in Nexus phones that... I think it plays well with the Verizon version, but I haven't tested it on AT&T.
There's a voiceover LTE toggle for the Nexuses when you have a T-Mo SIM in it as well.
That's just so
I
like,
would assume that it works with AT&T as well.
I don't have an AT&T postpaid line that I'd be able to check that with.
That's just kind of one of those things, like, I don't want to mess with having to turn that on. No, I'm lazy now.
Yes, enhanced 4G LTE mode. Use LTE services to improve voice and other communications. Recommended. But that was the thing. That wasn't turned on. Neither was Wi-Fi calling. I mean, you still had to go in and turn it on manually, which people don't really kind of monkey around in their mobile network settings all that often.
No, nor should they.
Nope.
Nor should they. All right, I think we're going to wrap it up. Again, podcast@androidcentral.com. Send us your questions. Send us your voicemails. I miss doing voicemails. We need to get those going again. Record your question and send it to us.
Thursday voicemail day.
Record it from your watch if you want. I don't care. I got to say that because people are going to do it anyway. So yep. I am
We've
thrilled.
Got a couple of those that sound really good.
I kid.
You keep jumping on it. But
I know. Just on principle. But yes, you're right. People have done that surprisingly well.
Don't record
well.
Your message from your Zen Watch 2. But if you have a Huawei watch or a Moto 360, then by all means.
And by the way, where's the new software for all those?
Right? All of those are...
It's in a warehouse with a bunch of LG Watcher Bane 2nd Edition LPs.
I had to send back that watch that can't be named anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
It's with top men now.
Like, not to be... I hate to be like that finally guy, but like, finally. Where is it? Finally, come on.
Gotta activate that voice feature you're never gonna use.
I know. Well, I think that's going to do it for this week. I'm thinking ahead to next week. Next week, we should be good for Thursday again, so we're going to plan on recording live Thursday afternoon. I kind of like this slightly earlier hour. We'll see. Might adjust that a little bit. Have to talk to everybody else. But yeah, we'll plan on Thursday.
And then the one after that will be a real pre-MWC, because that'll be the last one. You know, we're all traveling the next Thursday after that.
The next Thursday, yeah, we'll have to figure that out.
And then I think the week after that as well, aren't we?
Yeah,
we'll have a podcast from MWC though, for sure.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So we'll figure that out as we get
silly
closer
season.
To it.
It is upon us.
It is. So
and then Jerry and I will podcast like from inside of a car as we're driving.
Just to see. Oh yeah, yeah. Because we've got a big internal meeting. All hands.
I think
meeting.
That would actually be really funny.
Riding in cars with neckbeards
for like 20 hours.
It's like 9.
Oh, not bad.
Yeah, it's not too bad. So thank you, everybody, for putting up with all the time changes and stuff while we figure this stuff out. But I think it's all a good thing. We got so many changes going on.
For those of you listening on the recorded ends,
yeah,
you don't
what
care.
Do you care. Yeah. So, Andrew, Russell, thank you guys. Everybody at home, thank you. Everybody listening live, thank you. We will
thank you, Phil.
See y'all next week.